Okay, now I also have a, I never do this, kind of like I never use a mouse, which I did the other day, which is probably why everything went south. Things might blow up today because I never do this either. I have a cheat sheet because I'm going to be going through a lot of really quick demos, trying to bang some stuff out. Cool. Let's dive right in. Again, if there is a, if there is somebody who has control over the lights who is sensitive to the needs of vampires, it would be very much appreciated if you could dim them just slightly. If you can't, I understand we vampires are not very well liked in this country. So, it is insanely bright. It's like the sun. That's why I've been pacing. I'm trying to get out of the way of that light. It's not out of control. Again, get started. My name is Brady Gaster. As of right now, I work on the ASP.NET and Azure team. Specifically, I am one of three PMs on the ASP.NET team who do Visual Studio tooling. Myself, I do the Azure Tools stuff. Syed Hashimi, who began the Azure Tools stuff and the publishing stuff, is over what you guys know as the ASP.NET Core project system. And then everybody's favorite Dane, Mads Christensen. He is the guy that does all the editors, JSON, HTML, CSS, and I think he's up to like 7,000 third-party extensions that he writes for Visual Studio that you probably all use, Web Essentials, et cetera, et cetera. If you want to get in touch with all three of us to complain about the web tooling, we have an alias. It is thetoolingtrio@microsoft.com. That'll come to all three of us. I don't have a filter on it. They do, so I'll probably get back to you quicker. Another thing I want to point out is my email address. Feel free to use it. It is BradyG@microsoft.com. If you've heard this before, I apologize. It's my favorite joke. The first day at Microsoft, you do this thing called new employee orientation. My favorite segment of new employee orientation is when they give you a series of numbers. How many versions of Office are floating around the world? How many licenses of SQL Server have been sold over the last, 17 years? And my favorite number, how many emails get sent from one @microsoft.com address to another @microsoft.com address every single day? That number, 25 million. I get about 40% of those emails. So if I don't get back to you in a timely manner, it is not that I don't like you. It is that I'm trying to find somebody who can give you a better answer than myself. Okay, so I do want to point out, you can feel free to get in touch with me. You'll probably get a very rapid answer if you reach out to me around something ASP.NET. You'll get a very rapid answer if you reach out to me around something around Azure App Service. Okay, so I do want to stress that. Real quickly, since it blew up the other day and it's one of my favorite animations that I've ever done, I'm actually going to show this other deck from the other day very briefly, because I don't think I got my point across, and I don't think that everybody who is here was here the other day. So I just want to go through this one more time. How many of you are already, by the way, this whole survey thing that I do, I'm not kidding, I'm really surveying you. Okay, I like put this in my write-up, I tell everybody how many numbers go up, et cetera, et cetera. How many of you are already on Azure today? Dang. How many of you are on Azure in production, not just your blog? It's weird, that number is way down. How many of you are on Azure doing ASP.NET? And then obviously all the hands are gonna go up if I say how many of you are doing ASP.NET, right? Okay, just out of curiosity, how many of you are already doing ASP.NET Core? Okay, that's about what I expected. Okay. In Azure, we had this thing for a long time called Azure Websites. I was one of the evangelists responsible for letting everybody in the world know that Azure Websites was a thing. So I'm going to tell you kind of how things have evolved, because now there's no such thing as Azure Websites anymore. It's called Azure Web Apps. Here's why. What exactly is Azure App Service? It's the part of Azure that I do the VS tooling for. It's the part of Azure that I tend to party on because I'm a web guy and a REST API guy. How did we get here? Well, a long, long time ago in a cloud far, far away, we had a portal that was written in Silverlight, and we had this thing called Cloud Services and Web Roles and Worker Roles and a lot of that. Okay? And we started to hear from developers such as myself who said, all I want to do is write an ASP.NET app and push it up, FTP it up, follow the same practice that I've been doing for however many years, but I want to party on your cloud. I don't want to have to go through the rigmarole of doing a web role and all that. I just want to push my code. I don't want to have to tweak anything. Okay? So we introduced this thing called Azure Websites. Azure Websites was great. It was almost a straight vertical line of adoption. People got very enthusiastic about it. At first, the only thing that people really complained about was that SSL wasn't free. SSL isn't free anywhere for that matter, but that's a different conversation. We started to really see a volume lift in websites. People really, really liked it. And around the time that we got pretty happy with it, people started saying, well, what about mobile solutions? What about your mobility story? So this awesome guy named Josh, Josh Twist, came up with this idea of extending, did I turn it off? I'll just do it like this. He came up with the idea of extending websites and putting a layer on top of websites, and we called it mobile services. So whereas we have our PaaS structure, our cloud services, and all that infrastructure that's at the bottom, the special version of Windows and yada, 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 on top of that we have websites, and then we went ahead and we put mobile services on top of that. What we began to notice was that people were rarely using one or the other. They would write a web app, they'd present everything in HTML, and then they would use something like jQuery Mobile, or they would actually build their own iOS app or their Android app, and they would tie into the mobile service APIs, which I used to affectionately call Zumo, that was the code name. But they began to use both of these guys to talk to one another, and they might do something like a REST API in the website area. Things weren't really broken, but we had to fix it anyway. We started noticing that app developers were really partying in this space. So we changed the name of these things to web apps and mobile apps. The mobile services framework got a little bit simpler, and we began to kind of blur the lines between what it meant to be a web app and what it meant to be a mobile app, because a lot of the stuff that mobile apps had, it just sits on top of web apps. Then we started to hear from folks, well, we really have a lot of needs for APIs, and we like this concept of workflow. Why don't you add some of that stuff to Azure? So we took the concept of REST APIs, and in, I think it was March of 2015, we did the first introduction of API apps, which we called API Apps Preview. There was this thing in there that I talked quite a bit about yesterday called the API Gateway. I won't go into a long, verbose conversation about it, but what ended up happening was that we started hearing from developers, listen, the lines are so blurry between what it means to be a mobile app and a web app and an API app. Logic App is like all that plus a lot of stuff on top of it. And then we have this thing called Web Jobs. But it started to look like we had this entire app service. So we decided that we did have an app service, and we no longer had a need for all those individual monikers. So we took those four components. They became four different quadrants of what we now know as Azure App Service. About 60% of all Azure customers are actively deploying their stuff to Azure App Service. I saw some telemetry recently of some of the tooling stuff that I'm going to show you today around being able to publish and provision code to Azure App Service. And we saw it go from something around 71,000 publishes and provisions in January 2015. What that number is today? 191,000. That's monthly. It's a pretty good growth rate. Wouldn't you guys agree with that? It's a pretty successful growth rate. We've gone from 71 to 191. I can't do the math on that because I'm a PM. But, you know, you get the idea. So what I'm going to do today is I'm really going to focus a lot of the energy that we're going to dive into directly from within Visual Studio, because I am a VS guy. So a lot of the stuff that I'm going to start off with is going to be very tool focused. I think Javier might have mentioned that the other day. And then I'm going to go in and I'm going to show you some of the neat stuff that you can do in Azure. One of my favorite things about Azure is represented by the prep that I was doing yesterday on this talk, trying to finalize some of these demos. I had a couple of ideas of things I wanted to show, and as I was refining the demos and going through them, I actually found stuff in Azure that I have never seen before. So I'm actually going to be showing you stuff today that I learned yesterday. Okay? And that's kind of a suggestion to you. Just go in and start clicking buttons. Don't worry about the cost. A lot of the stuff that's going to be, that sounds like a marketing thing to say, don't worry about the cost, it's fine. We're going to tell you if things are going to cost, and you can delete it right away. Okay, how many of you have MSDN subscriptions that you're actually using your Azure Bennies? Okay, good. That's actually what I'm going to be doing today, too. All right, so let's go ahead and get started. I'm really just going to go through kind of an end-to-end workflow, building a very simple app, and then showing you how you can, like, take advantage of some of the stuff in Azure to like make life better. I'm a web guy, so some of the things that I'm going to show you are going to be very, very specific to some of the needs that web developers have. Things like CDN, things like storage, et cetera, et cetera. A little bit of auth. I'm not going to go very deep into that. Brock and Michelle have an excellent off thing coming up pretty soon. And Chris Klug just did a fantastic session on AAD B2C. So if you're into auth and you want to go a little bit deep, this is not the session you want to be at. I'm going to get you started with it, but then you're going to want to go to one of those other talks to learn more about what's possible in the land of AAD. All right, so just to get started, I'm really quickly going to do file new project. I'm just going to create a very basic, I'll just call it some basic MVC app. I'm just going to put that on my desktop. And what I want to show you over here is this area called Application Insights. Now, I'm actually not going to do anything with Application Insights today, not because I don't like it. I just haven't learned that much about it. Damian Brady has a fantastic session that he does on Application Insights. If you ever want to check that out, do so. But Application Insights is going to sort of mirror the functionality that you would get with something like Google Analytics, whereas Google Analytics is really just going to be JavaScript to show you how your pages are being traversed one by one. Imagine if you could take that JavaScript code, glue it to your server-side code, and now you could see the time it takes for a request to hit your front end and all the stuff that goes on in the back end, all the way down to like memory and CPU utilization. If you glue Application Insights into your ASP.NET app, you're going to have that visibility from top all the way to the bottom. And it's pretty simple to basically dial into JavaScript. It looks very similar to if you add Google Analytics to your client-side code. We give you that code directly in the portal. You paste it into your MVC app, and then you can, or into your HTML, and then you can just party on it. If you want to make use of some of the server-side telemetry features of Application Insights, now you're going to get that end-to-end story. You're going to see everything across the board. And then if you do something like throw Glimpse into your app, forget about it. You know more about your app than you ever needed to know. So, go ahead and escape out of my view here. Go right over here to OK. And I'm going to go ahead and do an MVC app. And I'm going to do one thing explicitly. I'm actually going to turn off authentication right here, not because I don't like it. I think it's fantastic. But later on, I'm going to show you how you can do codeless authentication using something called EasyAuth up in Azure. And I'll show you some documentation on these things as well. Go ahead and click OK. And then I'll do OK again here. Doo-doo-doo. Quick question, honest question. I'm going to try to fabricate this in a yes or no manner. You guys probably saw on the one ASP.NET dialog that I just clicked on, there's a little box there called Host in the Cloud. How many of you are, A, familiar with the Host in the Cloud checkbox? Okay? You guys know what I'm talking about when I say Host in the Cloud? If you check it, the first thing that you're going to see is that provisioning dialog that I'm going to show you here in just a moment. If you hit cancel in that provisioning dialog, we go ahead and we actually create the project for you. We just cancel the provisioning exercise and then go ahead and create the project. How many of you are familiar with that workflow? Anybody familiar with that workflow? How many of you felt it was a little odd that when you hit cancel, it actually doesn't cancel the project creation? Does that bug you? Okay. That's some questions that we've heard.
It's just weird.
Some customers freak out. Really bad. Yeah. It's like cancel means cancel.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm kind of on the religious side of that debate, and I'm losing. So all right, what I've done is I've just created just a plain Jane site right here, okay? And what I'm going to do first is I'm going to go directly into here to my controllers. I'm just going to add a couple of traces. Again, I'm going to be beginning this conversation by looking at some of the things that we have in tooling. First thing that I'm going to show you is this thing called log streaming. I'm going to show you application log streaming real quick. You guys used that in the past? Anybody tried that out? Cool. One hand. So you can do some emails or whatever. So the first thing I'm going to do is do trace. Trace dot control period. And I'm going to do trace error. I'm going to say oops. And I'll go ahead and do this guy. And I'll do it again right here. Just put another one here. And I want to go out and just do this. And the next thing I'm going to do, now that I've got my code in here, is I'm just going to really quickly do a publish. And I want to talk a little bit about this component of the tooling, because we've made some significant overhauls in this tooling recently. I'm currently running on the Azure SDK version 2.9, okay, which we just released recently. One of the things that I want to point out is that the web developer features that you get inside of Visual Studio, you get in the box. As you install Visual Studio and you get the Visual Studio updates, you're going to get what I know is WTE, the Web Tools Extensions. So I just said WTE, right? What we had in the past was that every single time we wanted to ship the app service tools components, which are the stuff that IPM, we would have to reship WTE. Whenever we wanted to ship the Azure SDK, we would have to reship WTE. So what do you think that does to our install time? Makes it go up. Makes it go up for the Azure SDK. Makes it go up for the overall Visual Studio experience. So what we've done recently is we've actually split those two pieces of functionality out. So we have WTE, which is the Web Tools extensions. Then we have this other thing called WTA, which is Web Tools for Azure. The first release of that, we called our WTF release, for obvious reasons. It was a pretty complicated period of time in our lives, figuring out how to reference everything and yada yada. So that was fun. Sorry for that politically incorrect joke for all of you who are offended. So the next thing you'll see here is a dialogue that was inspired by none other than Mr. Hunter himself, our super skip manager. What we did was we dialed in with some of the VS Core guys who gave us this keychain, this account picker, and what you'll see is that when I change my account up here, the list of subscriptions are going to change. Now, one of the things that Mr. Hunter said was, I'm on the road a lot, I do a lot of these demos, I'm creating a lot of applications, and when I look in my list of stuff that I've published up to Azure, my list of apps, it's just one really long list, and I tend to take the default name, so I can't find anything. It'd be really cool if you could give me a search function. I was like, Hunter, I'm on the road all the time too, and I don't have anywhere near that many things. I don't know what you're talking about. We always thought he was crazy, but then we tried it out, and you'll see that what I can do is I can type right here, and it'll actually find my resources that I have up in Azure. So if you, like Hunter and myself, have like 30, 40 web apps running up in Azure, you can do a search right here and you can find it. And if you flip from the resource group to the resource type view, we actually maintain your filter for you. So we've actually made it dirt simple for you to be able to find anything. Now, I'm not going to use my MSDN. I'm actually going to use my internal today. That'll flip. I'll go to my internal consumption guy. You see that I have a couple of web apps, some basic function. I'm not going to do that one. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to click new. Now, I talked about this the other day as well. This entire experience is wholly new as well. I'm going to zoom in a little bit on it here, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you that what we had in the past was everything on this screen was what you had in the pre-2.8.1 release of the Azure SDK. And what we were doing, or actually prior to the update where we actually put this into WTE as well. So what we have here is all the basic information that you're going to need for hosting, where you put your resource group, where you set up your app service plan, and all that good stuff. So what I'm going to do first is go ahead and get rid of these guys. And if you're doing things that are in ASP.NET that are not web, such as you're doing mobile or you're doing API, you take a look right here at this change type. In most cases, we're going to be able to figure out which thing it is. We always default to web because, you know, all the different things in app service, they're really all app services now. They have very little variance. But if I had the web API NuGets, it would assume that I wanted this to be a API app. If I had the API and the MVC NuGets, it's going to go web. If I have the mobile NuGets, it's going to go mobile, because that's always going to trump everything. So we actually try to be smart and to infer what type of app service it is that you're going to want to deploy. And in most cases, we get it right. If you're confused, just go with web. Technically, they're really all the same. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to select my resource group, which I've already got right here. And I think I'm going to have to create a new app service plan. So I'm going to go ahead and do this in East US. And one thing that we also heard from our customers loud and clear was it's really nice that you guys assume I don't want to spend any money. But I might want to take advantage of some of the standard premium or basic features and some of the higher level app service plans. And what's frustrating to me is that if I use the tools, it gets created as free, thank you, but now I have to go to the portal and I have to change my app service plan tier. I don't like doing that. I'd really like to just be able to pick S1, P1, or B1, or whatever I want directly from the tools. So we've actually given customers that ability as well. I'm going to go ahead and select S1 right now, which is the default of the portal. We actually default it to free, because we know that people that are in VS are probably going to be partying and deploying a lot more. One thing that you won't see on this dialogue that was on the previous dialogue is the database tab. Okay? In the past, we knew that developers who were using Entity Framework, they would probably want to do everything in a local database, and then when they pushed, we'd run all the EF migrations, create a database, and all that good stuff for you. Well, we've maintained that. We didn't want to have any takebacks, but when we did this stuff in 2.8.1, we literally rewrote all of it, threw it all out, started over. The reason we did that is I had a good friend in the document DB team who said, I know that in the current dialogue, you guys allow for the creation and provision of a SQL Server database and SQL Server. I'd like to give customers the ability to create a document DB along with it. I said, well, if I do it for you, I got to do it for everybody. I got to do it for Redis. I got to do it, you know, yada, yada, yada. I talked to my main dev about it, a guy named Mike. And I said, Mike, we need to do this, but we need to do it right. We need to make this entire dialogue experience extensible. Here's why. We ship the Azure SDK on average 4 times a year, 6 times a year tops if we have hot fixes. We ship Visual Studio maybe 3 to 4 times a year. So let's say that one of the Azure partners, I'll pick on Redis, let's say Redis decides that they want to change their API around 2 hours after we ship a VS release. Guess what? You're broken until we ship another VS release. That makes you sad. So there's all this back and forth that we have to do with all the Azure partner teams. Anybody out there ever written a client app for an API that then changed as soon as you released your app? Was it a good day for you? Imagine if you had 2 million customers. It's not fun. All right, so what we did was we made everything in this dialogue completely extensible. And such as, if I were to go right here and you see this SQL database, if I wanted a SQL database, I could click add. All of this is completely flexible too. This actually gets dialed in through a completely separate V6 and Visual Studio extension. Now, if the SQL team took over this and for whatever reason they knew they were gonna change their API, they could then change this V6, push this V6 to the extension gallery the same day that they push their API changes, and VS is gonna update itself just that one component, and then everybody's happy. In the future, we're gonna have other providers in here. We've already got one for Redis, we've got one for Key Vault, and we've got one for storage. We haven't shipped them yet because we're trying to land these contracts. But why this is important is we have this other thing out there called Azure Stack. And in Azure Stack, you can actually take Azure and run it on-prem, and it stands to reason that at some point, Azure Stack developers are going to want to create their own resource providers for their own things that they can do inside their own Azure Stack. If they do that, they're not going to open up their Azure Stack environments to Microsoft so that we can build tooling for them. And they don't have to anymore. They could just use this SDK. They could build tooling experiences for their own independent RPs. And then they can just party on it as well. So that's nice. One thing that we added in 2.9, if I go up here and I select all, is that we added the ability for somebody to do a secondary app service. So I might have a web app, which is the first thing that I'm gonna deploy, but my web app is gonna have a REST API, so I could go into this thing, create two resources at once. So I could have my web app with all my front end in one place, and I could have a REST API and a different app service that's actually gonna reach out and talk to it. Before this, 2.9, you would have to go through this provisioning experience twice, one for each thing that you wanna deploy. So let's say you have three web APIs, 2 mobile apps, and 4 websites. You can just go click, 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 click in here, and then it ships it off to Azure and it creates it all at one time. So I'm gonna go ahead and click cancel. I'm just gonna go ahead and click create at this point. And it's gonna reach out to the Azure Fabric. It's gonna go ahead and create the app service plan if I need it. It's also gonna go ahead and create my web app if I need it. Then it's gonna go ahead and download what's called a publish profile. Put that published profile directly into my project so that now I have the capability of being able to right-click my web app and just do a publish directly up to Azure. There we go. Now we go back into the publish flow. I'm ready to go. I'm gonna go ahead and click, I'm gonna do this, click next. I wanna point this out real quickly. See this configuration thing? I'm actually gonna change this from release to debug because I've got another demo that I'm gonna show you here in a moment. So I'm gonna click publish. What's gonna happen now is it's gonna package all that app up into a MS deploy package. It's basically a zip file. It's gonna make a call out to the Azure Fabric, do MS deploy push up to Azure. It's gonna land in what Javier probably told you guys about the other day is Kudu, explode the site and oops, that can't be good. Publish failed to deploy. A deployment, it couldn't connect to it. That's terribly bad. Try that again. Did I get provisioned? Am I connected? Yes. Sorry, folks. The good thing is I already have, I think I have one of these apps deployed, so if we needed to, we could go around and do stuff in the portal from there. There we go. Okay, loading my ACLs, et cetera, et cetera. Mr. Hunter was in a different country a few months back, and he basically everywhere he went had a pretty bad internet connection, kind of like here. And what we've noted is that we have, how can I put this? We have opportunities to improve our tooling so that on horrifically slow connections, it won't freak out and, you know, blow up on you. In fact, we've talked about doing, I think Facebook does this, where they actually slow down their network on Tuesdays. They have slow network Tuesdays, and they throttle their network. And then they, you know, basically have to tweak their code so that everything works on a super slow network. That is a fantastically cool idea. Highly recommend you do that. So it's kind of like the chaos monkey concept. But it's the slow chaos monkey concept, I guess. So this thing's dialing up. And what I want to do real quickly is I'm going to go over here to my ASP.NET and Azure node. And this is the Cloud Explorer. There's my SumBasic MVC app that I just created. And what I want to do is I want to expand this guy. Now, how many of you have not yet seen Cloud Explorer? Have you guys seen this? How many of you know about Server Explorer? You guys seen that? How many of you on a daily basis, or let's say, you know, three times a week, more than three times a week, you are either in Server Explorer or Cloud Explorer to do things with Azure? Really? It always blows my mind. That's a consistent answer to that question. You know, you can use those windows to manage your resources directly from within VS. You don't always have to go out to the portal. Just saying. So we're going to put more stuff in there in the future. That's why I call it out. So there, this guy's already loaded up. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over here, and you'll see that I've done the trace error. I'm going to go to this guy, and I'm going to say view streaming logs. And I have to expand my output window. I'll lock it in place. And what's going to happen here is that it's going to reach out to Azure, and in just a second, it should say, thank you. You are now connected to the log streaming service. So we're right here. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to shrink my window so we can see everything at once. So we can see that window. And I'm going to go in here, and I'm going to click on Home. You'll see what's going on. I'm writing all this stuff out to the window. Is that helpful? You guys think that would make life a little bit easier to understand how your stuff's working or not in the cloud? Well, let me tell you what frustrates me about this a little bit. So I'm going to do trace information in index. And I want to show you this because this has frustrated me in the past. I always forget one step here. So I want to show it to you so that you don't forget this step. So I've rebuilt. Everything is happy. I'm just going to really quickly do a right-click publish. And I want to point out that that publish, what it's going to do is it's only going to do a delta. It's not going to publish everything. It's just going to publish the variant. So it's going to go out and take a look. What's interesting about that, show you a feature that I bet nobody in here knows. How many of you have used that right-click publish feature in the past? You guys have used that, and you've gone all the way through to the preview window, and you've seen all your files. Did you know there's a diff viewer in that screen? Who knew there was a diff viewer in that screen? You did? Did I show it to you?
No, I didn't.
You did? You're the only guy that would find that. You're that guy. I'm going to pick on him a lot. We're old friends. Sorry. So there's that. Now, what I want to show you, just since Dave knows about it, I want to go over here to Home. I'm going to go to the index page. I'm like having some weird hangs today. I'm going to go right here, type my favorite greeting. And now, this is something not a lot of people know about either. Look here, I can actually just do this one file. I can actually right-click just that one file and just push that guy up. If I'm in this window, I can actually hold down Alt and do semicolon P, and it will just push that one file up to the cloud. But I don't want to do that. What I want to show you here is if I go into Publish, and I do Start Preview, it's going to go out and it's going to see everything that's up in the cloud and everything that's down on my machine, and it's going to see this is the one file that you need to push. Now, there's no visual cue in here, and this is one of those things that I've argued with Syed about, but the visual cue is double-click the file. Look here. Pulls up a diff view. If I had an image and I edited my image and I did this, it'll show you the two images next to each other so that you can actually see the variance of those two images. Isn't that pretty cool? I love that feature. It's fantastic. You can also do that directly from the Explorer. So I could go right here and I could say preview changes. I think it's actually going to do the same thing. It's actually going to pull up the diff viewer right here for me. So if I wanted to tweak that, I could. But that's already cool. So I've already pushed up my code with all these trace informations. So I'm going to go back over here one more time, and I'm going to say view streaming logs. clear this guy out. Go to my logs here. I'm going to clear it again. So it says I'm connected. So just quickly, I'm going to go and I'm going to do home about, and I'm only getting errors. I'm only getting errors. There's nowhere in your web config, nowhere in your code, no overload to trace information. It's in the portal. Let me show you where to go to find it so that you don't have to beat your head against the wall the way I have on many evenings. So I'm going to go to this guy, and I'm going to select my SunBasic MVC app. And you'll see that the settings are going to pop out. I'm going to scroll down, all the way down, all the way down to diagnostic logs. You'll see here, log level. You guys see that? Darn it. Snagit's being uncool. I'm going to go ahead and select information, and then I'll do a save. And right now, I'm just going to go right here and click browse. I'll do home about. I'll go back in here. Now you're seeing the information coming. So now you'll actually see all that stuff dial in. Pretty nice, huh? You guys think that'll help you out in the future? The good stuff? All right, so I'm going to go ahead and stop my log streams. I don't need to do any traces anymore, because what I have is some sort of a problem. Like, something's blowing up right here, and I don't know why this is blowing up. When I run it locally, everything works. But I can't debug it in the cloud. Like, if I hit F5, I'm going to debug it locally, and I can't do anything. I'll show you the number one most used gesture in all the tools that I'm going to show you today. If I go over here, and I click on this guy, you see right here, attach debugger. This will actually reach out to Azure and attach the debugger directly to the process running in the cloud. Quick note, if you try this, and when I say try it, you right-click your project, you do a publish, it lands on the site, it opens up and it browses, and then you flip over and you right-click and you do attach debugger, or your boss calls you at 3 o'clock in the morning and he says, something's wrong with the app, it's crashing, I don't know why. Nobody's hit the site for a little while, but a couple of hours ago it was crashing, and you right-click the debugger, and something like this happens, and the debugger never attaches. Anybody want to take a guess why? Because the debugger is attaching to w3wp.exe. That might not be running. Your site might have cooled off. At the same time, the actual site might have shut off, unless you've got like always on turned on. So do it a second time. I know that sounds really stupid, but that first request is going to wake the site up, and that second request is going to attach to the live debugger. In 97% of the cases, that second request will actually get you there. We've got telemetry indicating this, but I want to point it out because it is a known issue, but it's you know, the nature of the beast. Mike, my favorite dev, he is in the process of actually augmenting that experience, and he says that he's probably going to fix that thing pretty soon. He actually showed me a demo of it the other day, and it attached immediately. So upcoming release, you're going to see some significant improvements in that. Now what you'll see is that I've already gone and I've lit up and connected to my site. If I go over here and I click about, look here. Should happen immediately. I apologize, I do have a little bit of Franken build on my computer, so some things might not go as fast as they will for you. Running with real production bits, there we go. So I'm actually debugging live in the cloud right now. Okay, if I hit F5, everything's going to work. So it just comes right back. Now let me show you one thing that I tried last night. I've never actually tried this before. So I put a breakpoint right here on view. I'll go ahead and hit run. And now I'm going to go here to the immediate window, and I'm going to say viewBag.message. No way this works. There you go. Hit F5. So I can actually change things just like I can locally, and it'll put it up in the symbols, and you can make those changes on the fly. Oh, that's what's wrong with the site. Boss, I know how to fix the problem. Let me just fix this code locally and redeploy it. Boom. Imagine being able to do that, or imagine not being able to do that stuff live. Somebody is a smart aleck. Somebody else just hit the site. Aha. Good stuff. All right. Now I'm running standard, so you gotta hit it a bunch to, you know, exhaust my stuff. That's not a challenge either, by the way. All right. My boss will have a heart attack. All right, so I've shown you this stuff, and the next thing that I want to show you really quickly, again, I have my cheat sheet, so I'm just going to make sure I'm not skipping anything that's important to me, but I figure it is probably important to you. And since I have a smart aleck in the room, Stop it. So I'm going to go ahead and close this stuff down. Now, those of you who are partying in ASP.NET Core, you guys know that there's kind of a different set of things that are going on. So with an ASP.NET Core site, it doesn't necessarily run in that W3WP process. You guys have heard talk about Kestrel, DNX, blah, 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 blah. So what I'm going to show you right now actually works with the ASP.NET Core RC1 bits. It's going to change in RC2, and I don't even think you're going to have to do the manual step that I'm going to show you. But for those of you who are currently partying on the ASP.NET Core RC1 stuff, and you have a need to do remote debugging, I want to point out that it isn't automatic, but it also is possible. And I want to walk through how to do this. Now, I have a blog out on the ASP.NET and team blog that walks through this process, has a video and all that. But I'm going to show you how to do it now, so you don't even need to go read the blog. So I'm going to do add, new project. I'm going to do web. I'll call this guy some basic core app. I'll hit OK. Now I want to go down here to web app. Again, I want to turn off auth because I'm not going to be using it for this particular demo. I'm just going to click on OK. What that's going to do is it's going to lay down my basic ASP.NET Core web application from the normal XProj template. Once that guy is ready to go, I'm not going to do anything special aside from just go ahead and publish it directly up to Azure. I'm going to let my NuGets restore here. Restoring my NuGets. There we go. All right. Now, before I show you this, I do want to point out that there's going to be a manual step. It was a little intimidating the first time I saw it, but kind of got the hang of it. So I'm going to call this guy some basic core app. I'm going to put that into the same resource group and into the same app plan. I'm just going to go ahead and click create. That's going to go out. It's going to create one more app, download my publish profile, and I'm going to be able to publish it up into the cloud. I'm actually going to go ahead and select the RC1 final or update. I don't know which one I'm going to pick. Depends on how brave I feel when I get to that dialogue. I'm going to select that profile, and I'm also going to do a debug. So I'll go ahead and click next right here. I'm going to select debug, and I'm going to go ahead and go with RC1 final. You ever wonder if final was before update 1 or vice versa? I'll go with this. As long as it's CLR core, I'm good. I'll do a publish. Well, it's just going to do the same thing again. It's going to package it up, ship it up to the cloud, and I'll be ready to go. And while that's publishing, I'm actually going to go into my controllers right here, go in and set a breakpoint on this guy. While that's happening, I'm going to do a quick refresh over my Cloud Explorer, and there's my core app right here. I'll let it publish first, because if I try to debug it, I'm going to demonstrate that problem that I just pointed out before. Trying to attach the debugger to a process that's not running never works well. Since this wasn't my water, I'm going to put it somewhere where I won't drink from it. There we go. Any questions while I'm publishing this guy up? Any questions at this point? Sure. Is your question specific to like a farm, or specific to like what happens to the guy behind me coming in? Okay, the question, I think the question is, if I've got my site running on N instances and I attach the debugger, am I going to attach the debugger to all N instances or to just one instance? It's the latter, just one. It's just one. So
this might be the case if I have, let's say, 10 instances, I might have to actually do 10 requests.
Right. That's true. Like, if you're attached to machine A, and then another request comes in, it goes to machine B, and then machine C, and you've got three instances, and I'm guessing it's going round robin, it might not be. That's more math than I could ever even go with. And then the fourth request comes in, and he's coming in on your guy, and you've got the process stop. Yeah, but what should happen at that point is it's gonna spin up another thread for that subsequent request, and you're gonna be debugging on your thread, and that thread is gonna be okay. I believe that's actually how it works, because there's gonna be multiple threads for the individual requests coming in. So yeah, that's a great question though. Fantastic question. I remember the days that we did this debugging stuff, and that was one of the main questions that we had. And then when we got into web jobs, I'll forget about it. The process is even more complicated at that point. So yeah, debugging a multi-home service is not easy. OK, so what I'll do now is I'll right-click on this core app guy, and I'll say attach debugger. Again, we're going to go through this process. And I just want to show you this. So if you need to debug your ASP.NET Core apps on Azure, you will know how to do it. Again, we have a blog post on it. It's very basic. But for some, it's a little daunting at first. I want to show you how you can pull it off. Right before I ended my day yesterday, we were actually emailing with the devs. And one of the things that we're talking about is the new RC2 stuff and the plans for getting that into Azure. Mr. Hunter did something which I applaud. I think it's fantastic. He said that one of the release gates for ASP.NET Core is it being available in Azure App Service. I think that's a pretty awesome decision, personally. So what that meant was that we had to actually reach out to the App Service team and make sure they were comfortable with our bits, make sure they were comfortable with our framework, make sure they would release it on time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. One of the main things that we want to do there is, since ASP.NET Core RC1 apps use dnx.exe, RC2 is going to use .NET.exe. So the process that I'm going to show you right here today, we're actually going to be reaching out and connecting to dnx.exe because I'm doing RC1 because I wanted to show you this stuff. Mike, my dev, has actually told me that they've already tested just right-click attach debugger, and they're not going to have to do this. You won't have to do this additional step that I'm going to show you because we're just making the experience just as seamless as it was before. So I think that's pretty exciting. But what I do want to show you is that at this point, I'm connected to the debugger running in Azure, but this color tends to mean bad things. It means I'm not connected to the symbols that I'm trying to debug at this point in time. But connecting to it is not that complicated. I'm going to go up here to debug. I'm going to go down to attach to process. This always happens with my machine. It flips back to the browser, and then, boom, flips back to VS whenever it actually sees my list. Am I there? Now, this is my computer name. Assume that's where I want it to be, but if I do this, you'll see there's some basic core app, .azurewebsites.net. I click that guy, and I go right here. You'll see dnx.exe. That's the process that's actually running the core app. I click attach. See another series of dialogues as it goes ahead and reaches out to the fabric and attaches to the dnx.exe process. And once it does, the debugger will come back. The icon will turn red. This is going to load a bunch of the symbols down from dnx.exe, as well as the symbols from my own code. You guys enjoyed the conference so far? Who would go 4 out of 5 stars overall? You guys feeling good about it? Okay. This series of conferences is one of my favorite. I love being here. It's so much fun. Anybody bring their family? Brought mine. Have you seen them? I haven't seen them. They've been elsewhere. I think I'm connected. Oh, it says it's waiting. This is normal, because it does have to debug all the symbols a second time, all the dnx.exe symbols. Going to download all that stuff for me. It's 11:45, done at 1. Okay, we're on good time. Things should be okay here.
There we go. Now look,
icon changed color. That's a good sign. I'll go over here and I'll hit F5, flips right back to the debugger, and then there we go. We're directly in here. And I'll go ahead and I'll put a breakpoint on this guy to show you that the same functionality is possible. If I go to About, flip back to my debugger, and do this, you can debug core 2. Hit Enter, that roll. And whenever it loads, you'll see the new message updated directly in the HTML from the VBAC, maybe. It's going to come back to me. For whatever reason, that process was taking a little bit longer than I wanted it to last night as well. Yeah, it's got to reload the symbols, I guess. Sorry about that. Since I made a change, it's got to reload those symbols and pump everything back up. But you guys get the idea? You can indeed remote debug the RC1 bits, and we're going to make that better for you. There we go. And we're going to make that better for you when it comes to RC2. It's going to be a much more automatic process, such as if you debug vcurrent ASP.NET code. So there we go. Good stuff. I'm going to close this guy down. And we're going to switch gears just a little bit. I'm just going to shut down my debugger, free up a a bunch of resources on my computer. I'm gonna delete that project from here because we're gonna spend the rest of the day in this guy right here. Let me make sure that I'm on the right track. My script. Sorry to be cheating. Okay. Now what I'm gonna talk about now is CDN. Has anybody used CDN for anything? Okay, has anybody used bundling and minification inside of ASP.NET before? For those of you that use bundling and minification, did you know that there's support for CDN just built into it? It's already in there. It's been in there from the very beginning. Before I get too deep into this, one thing that I want to point out here, if I go to azure.com, this is not the portal, this is the doc site, basically. If I go to azure.com, I want to stress to you there is a very awesome tab in that toolbar up at the top labeled documentation. The Azure team has been moving a lot of the docs for things like MSDN and TechNet. They've been moving a lot of that stuff over to Azure because we heard from customers that we wanted to have like a faster cadence of documentation. And we have some things in place using GitHub and Markdown and all kinds of cool stuff around the Azure documentation. So we put a lot of that stuff into ACOM. It's what I call ACOM affectionately. Now what I'm going to show you real quickly is that everything that I'll be demonstrating today is completely available right off the Azure.com homepage, right off the documentation tab. I hear from a lot of customers that there's a big problem finding documentation on these specific things, especially in Azure, because a lot of the Azure stuff is so new and going so fast, it doesn't get into MSDN as quickly. We're working on that. We're going to be fixing that problem over the next year. But what I want to show you is that all this stuff is directly available right off this toolbar. So if I go over here to CDN, we've got videos and we've got lots of documentation on exactly how you can make use of CDN directly in your own applications. And at the same time, if you want to learn about Azure App Service, web apps, and API apps, we have a plethora of documentation on these guys as well. So if I were to go right here to web apps, you'll see there's a ton of stuff that you could do around web apps. All the documentation's up to date, mostly up to date. We actually have a TikTok that will watch all the documents that we put out there and will email us whenever like too many days have gone by without any updates. So we're tickled to email this stuff all the time. But what we've done here that's even better than like force ourselves to update on a pretty regular basis, so if I go over here to the documentation and I go to the API app stuff, because I know some of the documents in here because I've written some of them, and if I go directly to consume and I show you this code generation stuff, what you'll see up at the very top, oh shoot, that was one of the longer ones. That's actually not a good example. I'll go to this guy. This will be better. Okay, cool. What you'll see right here up at the very top is this contributors section. You guys see this right here? Check this link out. Edit on GitHub. All of our docs are on GitHub. And we support pull requests. And if you do a pull request, your mug will be on Azure.com as one of the contributing authors for the document. So if you're going through these documents and you're finding areas that like, ooh, this has been updated, I guess the writer hasn't tweaked this screenshot, I'll take a screenshot, commit it to GitHub, and send a pull request, your face goes on ACOM. It's pretty neat, huh? It's also a way for us to utilize you guys and your enthusiasm for making sure that our documentation is up to date. That's a kind way of me saying what I really want to say. That's a way for you to basically complete that loop and make it easy to get your own documentation and the other stuff that you want. Likewise, we love scenario documents that basically describe an entire end-to-end process. Some of these guys, if you print them out, they're 60 pages long. You may have a story like that that you want to tell on your own in the form of a document that might show some of the tricks of the trade that you've learned in your own. You can actually submit a brand new document to Azure.com's GitHub repository and eventually it'll get sucked in too. There's a CLA process, but there's no fax machine involved. There's no interviews. There's really just a form you fill out online, a couple of drops of blood. We're good. Okay. But what we're going to talk about today is going to be CDN. CDN, as you know, makes your site faster because we've got these edge servers all over the world. And what will happen is you'll put stuff up in CDN. The CDN content will go down to the edge servers, and that way you don't have to keep going back to your site every single time to make sure that everything is going to be money. So what we do is we give you the ability inside of ASP.NET to bundle it. Now I'm actually going to super cheat and use my cheat sheet file over here because I'm going to do a little bit of copying and pasting of code because I don't want to waste our time here. So I'm going to go ahead and do open with code, shrink this guy down. And the first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to go over here to this app start and I'm going to open up bundleconfig.cs. I'm really only going to do one of these. I'm just going to do one today just to show you how to get started with this CDN stuff. Now, obviously, it's going to be a lot easier, a lot more useful for you if you have video or large images or huge CSS documents that you want to put into a CDN. you could minify them, put them into the CDN, then you could browse them out directly from CDN by, you know, tweaking your bundling and minification code. So what I'll do first, I'm going to go and copy some code, quite frankly. I'm going to go down here, and I'm going to grab out a couple of lines of code just for giggles. I'm going to post this stuff directly into here. Now, what I'm doing is I've got a CDN path, and what I've done inside of Azure is I've actually created a CDN. I'm not going to go through that process, but what I will show you is how you could do it yourself. So I'm in my resource group, and I click on the Add button, and I go up here and I type CDN. You'll see that I've got a CDN endpoint that I could, or a CDN, it's called a CDN profile that I could create. I click on this guy and I click Create. There's a couple of really basic things that I can provide, where I want it to be, what resource group I want it to go in, and obviously what sort of tier I'm going to want to have. I usually go with standard, this guy right here. But I'm not going to create it, and the reason I'm not going to create it is it takes a little bit of time, because the first thing you have to do is you have to create what's called a CDN profile, which you'll see right here. And once you've got a CDN profile, you have to do an endpoint. You have to do a CDN endpoint. Now, if I click Add right here, I've got a couple of options. I've got the option to use a storage account, which is what I'm going to be doing today. I could do it with a cloud service, or I could do it with a web app if I want to. So I could actually point the CDN directly at my web app. Now, don't quote me on this, but I think the web app, the way that works, I haven't actually tried this, but I had a meeting with the CDN team, and we were talking about some tooling around this. But I believe what happens if you select web app is the CDN will scour your site, and it will look for anything that doesn't have a query string, such as a raw file, like a JS file or a CSS file. And for all of the stuff that it finds, it sucks that into CDN and then dynamically changes the URLs for those things so that when people browse your site, it just goes directly to the CDN stuff instead of to your own site. That's just crazy to me. I don't like to have that little control over things, and I might be misquoting what they told me in our meeting, but I believe that's what it does. Now, in the old days of CDN, it sat on top of an Azure storage account. For those of you that were in Javier's talk the other day, he probably showed you a lot of stuff with storage, specifically the Storage Explorer. The next demo I'm going to show is going to be specifically with the Storage Explorer as well. Now, what I've done is I have created a CDN profile, and I did this last night. And the reason that I did this, you can see right here that I've got my CDN profile. It's ASP.NET, Azure.AzureEdge.net. The reason that I did that last night is that the first thing it does is it goes out and it creates a DNS DNS entry for that particular Edge URL. That can take 90 minutes or more. So if you need a CDN right now, it's not going to happen. Okay. You need to create your CDN ahead of time, and then you can load it with data whenever you're actually ready for that data to be in there. So I just want to stress that. If you know you need a CDN, create it early, and then you can load it up later. I've already done that. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the URL, ASP.NET Azure.AzureEdge.net, and I'm going to put that right here. And what you'll see is that I'm just using the WAC format so that if it's HTTPS, it'll find it. If it's HTTP, it'll find it. I'm just doing that. That's actually what the documents kind of dictate. Next thing I'll show you is the one difference that I've got in this line of code is that I have the second parameter on the script bundle is the path to the CDN. And you'll, I hate how Snagit won't let me show the IntelliSense windows. If I do. Yeah, there you go. So you'll see that there's my virtual path and there's my CDN path. So the second guy that I've got right here, this is gonna be my CDN path directly to that file. Now, I don't have this JavaScript file up in my storage account yet. I'm actually going to have to add it up there. To do that, what I'll do is I'll go directly in here to my scripts, and I'll do open folder in File Explorer. You'll see there is my script right here, and I'm actually going to put the minified version of this script up into my Azure storage account. So over here, I have my Storage Explorer open, and what you'll see is that I have this container called test. I'm actually going to delete it because I'm not going to be using that guy. I'm going to go right here, and I'm going to create a new blob container, and I'll call it my CDN content. And one very important step you have to do here is you have to go into that particular guy, you have to set the public access level, and you need to make it public. I'll make it public for container and blobs. The reason you have to do that is there's going to be a URL for every single blob that you put in that container, and your users aren't going to be able to access it without some sort of a URL key unless you make it public. You definitely want it to be public if, in fact, you're doing it with CDN. So if you're putting videos up in here and you're streaming videos directly from CDN, obviously, you're going to want that stuff to be up to date. So what I've done at this point is created my blob container. I'm going to go ahead and select my stuff here. I'm going to say upload a file. And I'm going to select my file right here. Click upload. And now what actually did it? What happened? Upload files. That's weird. Good, block blob. Weird. Dismiss all. I don't know why that's happening. Is that the right storage account? Sorry, guys. Set container doesn't exist. Should exist. Oh, it's logging me out. Sorry. I'm going to do this through VS. You could do this through VS as well if you don't want to do it in here. You can actually go over to your stuff and party on it. And make sure I've got the right one. Storage for CDN. There's my guy. My blob container, CDN content. Do an upload file. Last try. Let me see. There we go. So I'm going to select this file, and I'm going to do copy URL. And that'll copy the URL for the blob itself that happens to be up in Azure storage. If I hit enter, you're going to see that that's going to render out. Now that's coming directly out of my blob, out of my blob storage container. There's no optimization. There's no. It's just get a URL. Might as well be on your web server. No real optimization there at all. But what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go up here and I'm going to copy out this guy, this URL here, and I'm just going to change this component of the URL. I'm actually going to make it HTTP, so I'm going to support that. And there it is again. Okay. Now what I'll do, now you can see that I've got that guy up in my storage account, I've got CDN sitting on top of that storage account, and I have gone ahead and I've created the bundle directly in here that says I want you to, you know, whenever he tells me to use CDN, which I've got this guy set as use CDN equals true, you could do this in your web config if you wanted to. What I'll do now is I'll just right-click this guy one more time, and I'll do one more publish. And once it publishes, I'm actually going to do a quick little view source and show you where we're serving that jQuery content from now. Now, if you wanted to do this really the right way, you'd put all your images, all your scripts, all the content that you're rarely going to change directly up into there, and all your stuff is going to be served directly from CDN, and then obviously you'd want to do that. That's weird. That can't be good. Publish. It's just funky. Did I blow something up?
Stopped it.
Oh, I did stop. You're a stud. It must have been you. Yeah, stud. All right, so I'll go to this guy. I'll start it. So whoever that was, get ready. All right. So I've started the site up. Let it reload real quick. Sorry about that. 27, we should be okay. Let's see what else I want to show y'all. Let's see some alerts here in a second. Okay. That'll be fun. Doo-doo-doo. Darn it. Okay. Let me do a view source. And if I scroll down, dang it, it's not turned on. It should be turned on. It should be serving it directly from the CDN. I don't know why that's happening. I think I know why. Because I'm published in debug. That's it. So that's the other thing. If you want the bundling and minification to turn on, you got to publish in release mode. That's one of the other tweaks for that. Sorry about that. So that will go up. Does anybody think they would use the CDN capabilities like this? Think that'd be helpful for you? Okay. How many of you would use it more if we had tooling for it? This is something that Mads and I have talked about so much. Like, Mads is a big like minification freak. He loves it. Web Essentials, you can do it directly from within VS, or you could use the ASP.NET methodology and you do it on the fly. One thing, I'll get to you in one second. One thing that Mads and I have talked about is when you right-click, it will basically inspect your project, find all the JavaScript, find all the CSS, find all the images, send them up to CDN, and then, here's the hard part, rewrite all the URLs in all of your code to go to the CDN instead of going to your site. See why we haven't done it yet? Who wants to help me with that regular expression? Yeah, I didn't think so. You have a question, sir? That's a fantastic question, which is, can we do this in a build step with team services? That's a great idea. Now I want to go home and try this. You totally could. And what you would do is you would iterate over your project during your build. Any of the files that you wanted to be in CDN, you would just publish them to a storage account, put your CDN on top of your storage account, and then it would work. But what I highly encourage that you do, if you're interested in using the CDN, is go out and watch the videos that the CDN team have done, because they have some pretty awesome demos of it. And if what I'm hearing from them is correctly, if you just say, I want you to do, like, instead of going to a storage account, I want you to do a web app, I believe it will figure it out for you automatically, and there's no build step required. It just does it on the fly. Again, that might freak you out. Freaks me out a little bit, but, you know, there's that. So I do want to point out, I think they do a lot of URL rewriting for you on the fly. I have no idea how. I'm a PM. Don't ask me. Let me scroll down. There we go. Oh, it's not serving it again. Dang it. Well, it did it yesterday. I don't know why it's not doing it now. But it will serve it from CDN if you, in fact, have it set up properly, which I apparently do not. Apologies for that. So all that said, let's go ahead and move right along. Next thing that I want to show you is this awesome thing called Azure Alerts. Okay, and this is something that I've actually been tinkering with a little while. And last night when I was working up this demo, this is one of those things that I tried it, and it takes a few minutes to run. So as I was waiting for it to happen, I was actually going around and like clicking around and doing other things, and this is when I discovered a bunch of stuff that I've never tried before, which I'm going to show you today. So the next thing I'll do is I'm going to go directly into here, and I'm going to go to my controllers guy, because I'm going to simulate an error case. Public action result, throw an error. We'll just do throw new application exception, holy. And we'll just go ahead and leave it at that. And we'll go ahead and publish this guy out, publish it out real quickly. And what we're doing is we're basically simulating an error. Now, how many of you ever have to be on call to support your applications? You get those calls at 5 o'clock in the morning, the site's blowing up, I don't know what's going on. Okay, well, we have this thing in Azure Alerts that you can basically enable that without having to create a whole mountain of monitoring software. We do a lot of this stuff for you. And you have great control over what you can do. So I'm still in my portal site for my my site. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to close down the settings. And I think Javier went through some of this stuff before. If you click on this button up here at the very top labeled Tools, not Settings, you click on Tools, what's going to open is all this stuff over here. Now, I'm going to walk through some of the tools that are in here as we're doing our alert, because it will take about 5 minutes for the alert to actually come through. And what I'll do first is I will go out to outlook.office 365, and I'll log into my own Outlook. So I don't have any alert rules yet, but I want to create some. Let me see if I have any new emails. Nope. So I'll go ahead and do add alert. And what resource do I want? Well, it's already going to figure out that I want it on that some basic MVC site that I've got there. When things break, or we'll just call it 500 errors, that's fine. Let me know something bad happens. I'm going to say it's going to be an alert on metrics. I think that's what I want. Nope, I want an alert on an events. So we'll see here. That's not it. No, it's metrics. That's it. So what I've got here is average memory working set and all these other things. And what I want to do is I'm going to scroll down until I get to HTTP server errors. Go ahead and leave this guy alone. And if I scroll down, you're going to see condition greater than blah, blah, blah. And I want to do threshold. We'll go ahead and do this as 5. And we'll see the period over the last 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. Obviously, I want to set it to 5 minutes because that's the slowest one. And I'll do BradyG@Microsoft.com. And I'm running on my internally built account, so I'm not going to check that box because people that I don't want to get the email will get the email. The other thing that's cool, and again, this has been heavily documented on AECOM, is that you could actually do this with a webhook. So if I were to go over here, you can see that you could actually set up a webhook. So you could set up some sort of a Twilio app that would send you a text message. Then you could put a webhook on top of that app so that instead of doing this with email, whenever this thing, you know, whenever your alert fires, it's actually going to hit a webhook that webhook is going to turn around and send you a text message. I'm not going to go through that right now. I just want to show you how this works and give us some time to walk through a couple of other really small demos. I'm just going to leave it as email and leave my email open in the background. So you'll see that what I'm doing is I'm saying, if I get 5 500s in 5 minutes, I want you to email me and everybody else in my management chain, basically. Yeah, I would imagine you probably want to put like a distribution list in there so that all your devs and PMs got the email. So I'll go over here and I'll just say home, throw an error. And since saying error is a curve while processing your request, the smart aleck out there is probably helping me with this. I'm just going to hit F5 a couple hundred times, let it error out a few times. And I'm going to leave it running, so be nice, please. Just take your hands off the keyboard, step away. Okay, now I've definitely generated more than 5. Now what's happening is there's this process that's coming around. It watches all these sites, and it knows when these things are going on, and it sees that people have these alerts set up. It's not exactly instantaneous because it has to say, well, he told me only let him know if it happens over a 5 minute period of time more than 5 times. It just happened 37 times, or 498 times, depending on if the smart aleck out there is still hitting the site. So I have to wait 5 minutes, and if it keeps happening, I need to email it. So it's basically got a queue message somewhere waiting to get picked up so that it can shoot me an email and tell me that things are going to blow up. But we're going to wait 5 minutes. I'm not going to stand up here in dead silence, but I'm going to walk through and I'm going to show you a couple of other features, again, that I discovered last night as I was waiting 5 minutes for this to actually transpire. If I go over here, you'll see it still says never. It's because it hasn't actually, you know, picked up the firing yet. So we'll just let this run for a second. But what I want to do real quickly now is I want to scroll up and I want to show you some of these other tools. Now, if I go over here to extensions, if I click this extensions list, Javier probably talked a little bit about Kudu. Kudu is this guy right here, which is literally like where you can go in and you can do very low-level things. You can customize your deployment process. If you're using Git or TFS to basically feed into Kudu, which will do your publish, you can actually have a command file that would do all kinds of fun things. You could bundle and minify your files directly on the fly. You just party on it, okay? So I'm going to click on Add right here, because what they did with Kudu was they created an extension model very similar to the V6 extension model that we have in VS or, you know, any other, you know, modern application, if you will. And you can actually create these individual extensions, give them to the app service team, and they'll put them into Kudu. A lot of the ones that you'll see here are written by either by the team themselves or by colleagues of mine. David Ebo and Elliot Hamai, those are the guys that actually wrote Kudu, so they're, you know, they can put stuff in there whenever they want to. Corey Fowler is a good buddy of mine from the evangelism team. He's a big PHP guy, so he's written a Composer extension for Kudu, so you've got Composer directly in there. There's one that I'm looking for specifically, this one right here, my buddies Syed and Mad wrote, called the Azure Image Optimizer. If you were to turn that thing on, what's going to happen is they've got a file system watcher that'll wake up, you know, n minutes at a time. It will scan your entire directory structure and look for every GIF or GIF, depending on your poison, JPEG, ping, all the other image types that you could find, open them up and optimize them and resave them. So that if you've got images that are unoptimized up in your site that are chewing up your bandwidth, they solve that problem for you by giving you an extension. You can just enable that extension, it'll go through and just optimize your images on the fly. If you wanted to write your own, you could do that if you wanted to, and you could submit it to the Kudu team. They'll put it through a humongoloid battery of tests to see if everything is money. And if in fact it is, your extension will be one of the ones that are available right here. I don't know if you can make money on it or not, but you know, hey, there's always opportunity. Again, here's another one that Syed and Mads wrote. You can see these guys just go crazy over the weekends. This is the Azure Minifier, which will actually go through and minify all your scripts and everything. So if you're not using CDN and you have all of your files directly in the on the disk of your site, you could use this minifier and you could use less space on your disk because it'll go through and minify all those files. And what they do is they literally use a file system watcher that just runs and does stuff on the fly. And if you go down, there's all other kinds of stuff that you could do. So I do want to point that out. You could enable gulp. You know, sky's the limit, so to speak. I'm not going to do any of these right now. I just want to show you that they are indeed available. But the other thing that I want to show you is, if I go right here into console, this is pretty groovy. Now I'm in a console window, iterating over all the directories in my site. I could like do whatever I wanted to do right here. I could, you know, start up a Vim editor and change files if I want to. I could totally party on it. And then the other thing that I'll show you at this point is, if I go up here, to performance test. This is sort of a new feature. I really like this. We've seen a lot of week-over-week usage of this feature. How many of you are VSO users? So you've got the tools within Visual Studio to do like your load tests on your web app and that kind of thing. You could do that directly in the portal. And this actually goes out and it makes use of all the same VSO plumbing. It just starts up a perf test and fires it up on your site and starts hitting your site for you. I'm going to, you see that I did one last night. I didn't let it finish. I'm going to go ahead and close this guy out. And I'm going to say add right here, do a new one. And I could do, what's my URL? I don't want to do that one. That would be bad. Go right here. I could just call it perf test, call it 02. East US, user load, and duration 5 minutes. So I can actually simulate a 250 user 5 minute bash on my site directly from the portal. And when I do this, you're going to see all the metrics show up directly in the portal to show you how your site is performing under that kind of load. If you want to increase it, you can do that all day long. You guys think you'd use that directly from the portal? It's a heck of a lot easier than doing the web test in VS and pushing it to the server and yada, yada, yada. This just does it directly from within the portal. I've even got a REST API for it that's pretty well documented. Now, I'm not going to save that, but what I do want to do is I want to go back over here to my alerts, see if this thing has run. It has run. It says just now. Look here. I just got an alert right here in my email. So you can actually set up your alerts directly in Azure. Please don't read the other email headers. You could set up a thing right here, and you could actually get alerts directly from your site whenever your site starts to blow up and die. So that's pretty groovy. Now, let me make sure I've got everything going here. Make sure we're on time. Okay, so that's good. The next thing I'm going to show you is going to be Redis for session state. Before I get into that, I'm not going to show you Redis for the traditional caching stuff. I'm really just going to show it for session state today. But what I want to show you, I want to go back to my deck over here, shrink this guy down, go back to my presentations, and I want to pull up the deck that only has one slide or two in it. And I want to go to this slide right here, and I want to show you this. Now, why would I want to show you Redis? Because this performance chart right here pretty clearly indicates that Redis is one good option if you have a scaled out site and you need to manage your session state. Anybody using session? I know it's a bad word, but feel free to raise your hand. Okay. If you're using sessions and you've got multiple instances of your site, which is one of the great things about Azure, is you can slide that slider out, you can get multiple instances. You're going to want to use some sort of out-of-process session management utility. And as you can see from this chart, Redis is a pretty darn good option. Its throughput's pretty fantastic. Got some good stuff. And I've got a link down at the bottom that kind of shows you where this research was done. But what I'm going to show you real quickly is I've already created a Redis cache guy right here. And again, that's one that I think last night when I went and created a Redis cache, I believe it took about 20 minutes to actually provision that Redis cache. So if you know you're going to want to use Redis cache for some of this stuff, you're going to want to do that ahead of time. You're not going to wait until right before you need it. You're going to want to do it ahead of time. So what I've done is I've actually created my Redis cache right here. And I'm going to do a couple of things that are not necessarily best practice, but I'm just going to show you this stuff just to kind of get us rolling here. I want to go over here to my access keys. We're going to be copying that stuff out here in a moment. But what's nice is we have this NuGet package. Let me see if I can find it. Redis session state. Is that it? Redis state provider. There you go. So we've got this Redis session state provider right here. I want to copy this stuff out. So I'm going to go back over here to VS and go to my package manager console window, paste this guy in, hit enter. And what it's going to do is it's going to go ahead and bring down everything that I'm going to need to be able to party on Redis. And it's going to, you know, go ahead and dial in some stuff into my web config to make it super, super simple for me to wire this stuff up. So I'm just going to close this guy down, and it shows you exactly what you'd want to do. I'm going to go ahead and get rid of this node. And I'm going to use the connection string option. And what it says here is you can either use connection string or, I want to show you this so it's clear, you have three options to configure this. One of these guys is the connection string attribute. Another option is use these two attributes together. A third option is use these 17 attributes together. Which one do you think I'm going to go with? I'm a PM, so I'm going to go with connection string. All right, so what I'll do right here is I'll go ahead and I'll copy this connection string guy out, and I'm gonna just really quickly back all this stuff up, use my connection string right here, and that way I don't have to figure out what I'm gonna need to do. Now, where do we think I have to get my connection string? Could this be difficult? Probably not. If I go right here, Stack Exchange Redis, click that guy, copy it, it has been copied. I go over to here, my connection string, and I just paste it in. Now what I'm going to, I'm not going to do this, it'd be kind of silly. I could run it locally. Let me see if this will work. I'll try this. So what I'll do here is I'll say session, this is a demo I've not yet tried, sum var, and I'll set it equal to, I don't know if this will work, localhost, set at localhost, and now I want to do this right here. Go to about and put this guy right here. Now I'll do a quick build, make sure we're money, pull down all my nuggets. And now I'm going to publish it out. And I'm going to actually do, I'll do it like this. Push it there. I'm kind of wondering if I were to set it in the about page and then read it out. So it's going to sit there. If this will work. This will actually set my session variable. Since I'm using Redis, since I'm like in a load balanced environment, so to speak, I'm running one node on localhost and one node on Azure. What it's going to do is it's actually going to set this session variable, which will go over, set it into my Redis cache. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to run this thing locally. I'm going to go ahead and do properties right here. I'm going to go over to my web, and I'm going to say a specific page. I want to go to home, about. Because when I hit F5, I want it to go to home about. And I'll just click F5. We'll see if we get the session variable here. It may blow up on me. I've never tried doing this way, but we'll see what happens. Nope, didn't do it. So it's kind of odd. But get the idea. This will basically use Redis as your session management. And again, if you want to use Redis as your caching methodology, you can totally do that as well. You could use Redis instead of whatever the default improc methodology is for your output cache. So if you're using MVC View output caching, you can actually do that directly from within there too. The nice thing about this is if you're running on multiple instances, you're going to want to do something out of proc. Redis is going to be a heck of a lot faster than using SQL. Okay, so I do want to stress that. The last thing that I'm going to show you, we'll probably end with about 5 minutes of spare time here. The last thing that I'm going to show you is going to be something around SignalR. Anybody use SignalR? Or as Damien says, SignalR. How many of you have been to one of my SignalR talks? Anybody been to one of these in the past? You might have seen this demo before, but I'm just going to show it to you one more time. If you haven't seen it, it'll kind of give you another good example from when you're going to want to use Redis for something. Now, I'm going to go ahead and run my deck here. Because what I want to show you is, when we talk about SignalR, there's this thing called a SignalR hub. And the hub is what lives on the server side. So that your JavaScript code or your C# code can actually reach out, make a connection to that hub, and send messages in real time back and forth between all the different clients on that hub. The issue with that methodology is that the hub is server-bound. So if you're in a load-balanced environment and you're doing SignalR, here's what's going to happen. When each client makes a request to the server, they're going to hit server A, server B, or server C, and only the users that are connected to the same instance are going to get the message coming back out on the other side again. The way you work around that is you drop in what's called a SignalR backplane. And there's three main ones that are out there to kind of get you started. One of them is inside of Service Bus, one is in SQL, and one is in Redis. All right. If you drop in one of these backplanes, what ends up happening is the message will go to the server will turn around, hand the message off to the backplane, then the backplane will hand the message back to all the servers that happen to be connected, therefore connecting back to all the individual clients of your SignalR hub. So if you want to run SignalR in a load-balanced environment, you have to implement a backplane or it will not work. Okay, one of the backplanes that's been implemented, obviously, is the Redis backplane, which I'm going to show you here today. So if I were to go over to my VS, let's see if I've got that project in memory here, scaling with Redis. I'll go ahead and open this guy up real quickly. And I'm going to run this localhost, but I'm going to be talking to Redis cache that's out in Azure. And what what I'll do first is I want to show, I'll do it from within VS. So I've got this guy right here, and I've already got the Redis backplane NuGet installed. And what I'll show you is basically a simple little chat app. It's the only time I ever do a chat app. Now, this is not the active Redis. I've deleted the Redis that I had there before. So what I've got to do is I've got to go into my Redis guy, which is right here. Got to copy out my key. Could do primary or secondary. I'm going to paste this guy right here. Oh, I see what I did wrong. I forgot to enable HTTP. That's what it was. Dang it. So I'm going to do properties. Non-SSL, where did it go? Access ports, there we go. I'm gonna turn it on for HTTP as well. That's why that thing didn't work before with the session. Sorry about that. Maybe it'll work now, I'll try it out here in a second. So that's 6379, I'm good there, that's my thing. Let me get my name right here. Paste this guy in. And this last property doesn't really matter, that's just really the area inside of your Redis cache that's gonna be used for signal art. Now, I'm going to really quickly do a compilation right here because I've got my scale out turned off. That's very deliberate because I want to show you what happens when you are running on a multiple server instance. Now, what I've got here is a simple little batch file, and what it's going to do is it's going to start an instance of IIS Express directly on my machine running on port 9090. Then I've got a second one that's going to start that same instance on port 9091, and they're going to be serving code from exactly the same folder. Sort of a poor man's way of emulating a multi-homed environment. Let me do a build one more time just to make sure I actually did a build. That worked. I'm going to start server A. I'm going to go over here and I'm going to start server B, or rename the file. Now I'm going to pop open my browser one more time. I'm going to do a new window twice and shrink these guys down so you can see what's going on. Localhost 9090. See, I'm dialed in right there. And now I'll do localhost 9091. And this actually will connect two different guys. So I've got this guy who's connected to the hub running on 9091, this guy who's connected to the hub running on 90. If I start sending messages, I thought it was real time. Real time with one user doesn't count, Brady. So what we're going to do now, I'm going to go into this code, and I'm going to set up the scale out stuff. I'm just going to do a rebuild, then I'm going to refresh my browsers. And what's going to happen now is that it's going to reach out and it's going to start using Redis cache as my backplane for those SignalR hubs that are happening running inside of these instances. And now when I do this, you can see that I'm going to be going back and forth between these two guys. So this is a nice way of you seeing how you could do SignalR backplaning using Redis, or you could use Service Bus for that matter, and you could party on it as well. And the last thing that I want to show you around SignalR, because it's just such a topic of love and adoration for me, I'm not being sarcastic, I am the SignalR cheerleader. If I go over here into my settings, I go to my application settings, I can click it. And one thing that you need to remember about SignalR is that it's smart enough to figure out if the server and the client both support like some sort of higher order real-time functionality. Obviously, the number one of those is going to be WebSockets. Okay, so WebSockets is going to be your best way to do SignalR. It's going to be super fast real time. But sometimes it's difficult to know how to turn it on. If you're running on IIS, you're going to have to install the WebSocket stuff, configure it, and all that stuff. Or if you're in Azure, you just go over here and you go on. And now you've enabled WebSockets inside of your Azure web app. And since you have enabled WebSockets inside of your Azure web app, whenever the SignalR client reaches out to your Azure web app and says, hey, do you speak WebSockets? Your Azure web app will go, heck yeah. And then everybody's going to be partying in true real time using WebSockets. So I think we're out of time. I gave you about 5 minutes of extra lunch time to get in line and get the best snack. I hope you guys have enjoyed this. Again, my name is Brady Gaster. You can get in touch with me at BradyG@Microsoft.com. If you think that your peers, colleagues, children, family members will want to have some stickers, please take all of them. They are for you, not for me. And that's that. Hope you guys have a great weekend and a great trip home.